Hello, it is October 16th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 7.4 of the Willich Experience podcast on sports on earth. I am the aforementioned Willich, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. The NBA season starting early this year. I'm okay with this because I'm going to talk to my guests about this today. The NBA, I have always liked the NBA. I've always been a big NBA fan, but now really does feel like as much fun as I can remember the league ever being. And that is even kind of allotting for the fact that everyone seems to think they know who's going to win the championship every year, which is supposedly a problem. I don't know. I find that team very fun to watch, but that's a whole other discussion. I will talk to someone a lot smarter than me about this stuff. And that is Michael Pina. He is there. He's a staff writer for Vice Sports. He's a co-host of the Big Three podcast. He is awesome. Michael, how's it going, man? Am I wrong? First off, two questions. And then that's it. This is the whole podcast. One, how you doing? And two, am I wrong to be this excited? Are you going to rain on my proverbial parade?
Well, I'm doing great, Will, and thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. And, you know, it's funny. I think you had me on about a year ago now to preview last season. Mm-hmm. And I think your first question was the exact same thing.
Good. It's still good. It's still good, right? It's still good. Because I thought last year was pretty fun.
Last year was a ton of fun. And then, you know, we had the wildest offseason, I think, ever. And with just so much unpredictable moves taking place, so many all-star caliber players switching teams, switching conferences. So I find this year really hard to predict, even though the great irony, as you mentioned, was the Golden State Warriors kind of being the team that's going to win it all. But the great irony is that they're probably going to win everything and romp through the league. But, there's so many great storylines and subplots in the meantime, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
I find this fascinating. I remember a few years ago when Zach Lowe talked about how the Warriors were building something so good. Ironically, the year he wrote this, the Warriors did not win the championship. But I remember when he said that they're building something so good that there are a lot of teams that are just ducking their head down and waiting for this storm to pass. And I remember reading that thinking, yep, that is exactly what I would do because I'm a coward. I would totally just like, you know what? You guys are fun to watch. I'm never going to beat you. This is why I feel like if I could work for MSG and everyone would just give me a 10-year contract, I'd be awesome because I don't care. We're not beating those guys. Just, I'm sure those things are both going to happen. But to me, like that's – when he said that, I totally understood that because it felt like they were so good and no one's going to be able to touch them. That it made sense to just like, just chill out. We're not winning a championship. Let this pass, build up something. So we've got something great in 5 years, but that's not what has happened at all. You've seen Oklahoma State make their moves. You've seen Houston make their moves. We'll get into the previews of these teams and so on. I'm curious, as someone that follows the league, what would you have done? What Oklahoma, like to me, it's funny, Oklahoma State bringing Carmelo, you have to get Carmelo, but they're probably not. They're still not going to win, and now they're pushed off to the future. Houston being the same kind of thing. It just feels like I don't know if I would do this because it feels like you're not going to beat them anyway.
Well, talking about Oklahoma City specifically, I think that the two deals that they made to get Paul George, trading Domantas Sabonis and Victor Oladipo, getting off Victor Oladipo's contract, I mean, that was just like one of the great heists in recent memory. And then getting Carmelo, you're dealing Enes Kanter and Doug McDermott, two guys who are unplayable in the postseason, particularly against Golden State Warriors. So, I mean, those two moves were, you know, you do them 10 times out of 10.
Right.
I get what you're saying. And I think that, you know, you increase your odds to win the championship. I don't know how many percentage points. I'm not being scientific here, but you increase your odds a good deal by adding those two players. And, you know, the NBA is really funny. Obviously, it's professional sports. Anything can happen. I mean, if Steph Curry twists his ankle in the Western Conference Finals and you're the Thunder and you're going up against them and, you know, there's an opportunity there to squeak through. And I don't know if you would be in that position if you didn't make those moves. So, I mean, there's really no opportunity cost here for them. I feel like if you have a chance to get better, you still should You know, there are 30 teams in the league. A lot of teams are going in the opposite direction this year. And so you can't, it's really difficult to kind of out tank everybody if everybody's kind of doing that. So I don't really blame the teams that are still trying to be competitive. I think it's awesome.
For the record, I would be an excellent tanker. I don't know if I would bring any talent in result of the tanking, but I could out tank anybody. Okay, I was going to start with the Eastern Conference, but now we kind of talked about the Western Conference a little bit. Let's talk about that. It's funny, Zach, speaking of Zach Lowe, Zach Lowe's written a little bit about how, you know, the problem with Oklahoma State, not so much that Carmelo, obviously you have to get Carmelo, but, you know, they've actually had some success kind of knocking around Golden State a little bit. Is there a way, if you were, as much as you've watched Golden State, is there a way that makes them uncomfortable? Is there a way that they don't like to play? And is there a team, specifically starting out in the Western Conference, that is most apt to be able to do that to them?
So I don't know if you can make the Warriors uncomfortable. I mean, obviously the way to do it would be to do what the New Orleans Pelicans are doing, which is, you know, you load up in the front court with two massive beasts in Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and you bludgeon them on the glass, and you hopefully are able to surround Davis and Cousins with enough shooting, which the Pelicans failed to do, which is why I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs. But I think if you want to beat the Warriors, you probably have to, you know, zig where they're zagging stylistically. But, you know, that being said, the one team that I actually think could have a chance to beat the Warriors is basically trying to do what the Warriors are doing, except a little bit better. And that team is the Houston Rockets. So, you know, they add Chris Paul this summer. You know, Chris Paul is coming off the best shooting season of his Hall of Fame career. I think he's a wonderful compliment to James Harden. I'm not really concerned at all with how they can kind of gear up with each other. I think the idea of, you know, out shooting them, just launching a bunch of threes, being as versatile as possible. They added Luke Richard Mbamute and PJ Tucker, who they probably envisioned to be a small ball five at times in that matchup. So I like the Rockets a lot this year. I liked them last year, but I thought they were obviously a little bit one dimensional. And I think that the additions they made on the defensive end to be a little bit more versatile, the guys that I just mentioned, their ability to unlock lineups. I mean, they have also a deep front court with Nene and Clint Capella, who's really young and improving every year. So I like the Rockets. I think they can play any way the Warriors want to play. And it's just, it's, I don't know if they'll beat them, but that's the one team that really intrigues me.
It's funny, San Antonio always take away kind of, you know, some of their injuries, the injuries in the postseason last year, they might have been able to make a little bit of run. Kawhi seems to be not quite right yet. If they get everybody healthy and Leonard is what is the MVP candidate everyone wants him to be and thinks he should be, can they give a run at him, or are they still kind of like, are they still just that six, that only that 55 to 60 win team that still doesn't quite compare?
The Spurs are really interesting. I think a lot of people have talked about how competitive that they were with the Warriors last year. I think that Kawhi Leonard could be the best player in that series going forward. I mean, he's a few years younger than Curry and Durant. You mentioned I think it's a hamstring injury. I'm not really sure what exactly it is that's keeping him out, but that's obviously a concern. But as long as he's right at the end of the year, I like their chances. They have the best coach in basketball history. I do like how, you know, their ability to remain big and with Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge and kind of create a little bit of issues with their defensive game plan against the Golden State Warriors. Draymond Green actually cited the Spurs as the one team that, you know, could potentially knock them off, I think, a little while ago over the offseason in an interview. But yeah, I mean, I like also how, you know, they add Rudy Gay. I think a lot of people are writing him off completely. I think that's kind of it's a sneaky signing. I mean, it's whenever someone who is good at basketball goes to the Spurs, it intrigues me because they know how to use players. They know how to get the most out of guys. So you add someone like that, and then all of a sudden, you know, you can play Kawhi at the four in smaller lineups with LaMarcus Aldridge at the five, Rudy Gay at the three. You can get a little bit bigger with DeJounte Murray at point guard, and it's just really interesting. So, nothing about the Spurs would really ever surprise me. I mean, if they won the championship this year, I'm not going to be shocked. I mean, it's the Spurs. But yeah, no, they're just their versatility again. Their ability to go big, go small, play fast, play slow. I really like them a lot.
I want to. We'll get into some of the more a couple of little interesting teams in the West in a second, but I really want to make sure. I feel like there's so much discussion of all the teams who can challenge the Warriors that people almost forget to talk about the Warriors. it's funny, of course, probably because there's like 8 books out about them right now, so I think everyone's just maybe a little exhausted. All by really good writers, but still. But it's funny because there does seem to be this consensus. They struggled. There were times when Durant. I remember that when Durant got hurt last year, and everybody freaked out, and they got drilled in those first 2 games after he got hurt, and everyone was worried. Is there what are the things that they might have needed to work on that they fix this year? People talk about Durant being with them all season. Were there little inefficiencies that they had last year that they could just increase? And I guess secondly, do they even care about winning 70 games or 65 or whatever? Will we see them take times off, or is that something even that the new schedule will be able to help out?
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, if I were them, I wouldn't care about the regular season at all. I mean, they've made 3 straight. First of all, they're the first team in NBA history to win 67 games, at least 67 games in a row in 3 straight years, which is just absolutely remarkable.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've had a ton of success in the regular season. They've obviously had a ton of success in the postseason. 3 straight runs to the finals. That's a lot of basketball. It's a lot of minutes on KD and who, you know, he made his runs with the Thunder before that, but, you know, Steph, Clay, Draymond. So I wouldn't care so much about the regular season if I were them. That's why if I was a gambling man, I would probably take the under. But I mean, looking at them, I just don't know if there is a flaw, just because, I mean, the one thing is just their size in the front court. Obviously, you know, they start Zaza Pachulia, who is, not my favorite player in any capacity. I don't think he's very good. But they start him, and, you know, obviously they can go small with Draymond, and, you know, he's only 6'7", but his ability to guard bigger guys, his ability to be one of the smartest off-ball defenders in NBA history, his communication on the back line, he's remarkable. Andre Iguodala off the bench. I mean, if I was looking at one weakness, it would be Iguodala's age, probably, and, you know, the potential that he could suffer an injury and miss significant time and when games really start to matter. But besides that, I don't know how you beat this team right now. As these guys get older, as Curry gets older and KD gets older, I think Curry turns 30 this year. Maybe there's some sort of window of opportunity for the rest of the league. But I mean, the fact that KD took less money as the pay cut that he took was so significant to allow them to keep Iguodala and Livingston. And it's just like, I don't know what to do here. I mean, the CBA is defanged by players who make those decisions. And so I don't know when this dynasty is going to end its course.
Okay, a couple of other interesting teams I want to talk about. You wrote a good piece on Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. This is the team that has the longest playoff drought in professional sports, I believe, at this point. Or definitely in the NBA. Are they making the playoffs this year?
Oh yeah, no question.
Yeah.
I have them penciling in at the 5 spot in that Western Conference.
Oh, wow.
I obviously like Jimmy Butler. I mean, he was third team all NBA last season on a team that, you know, almost like comically went out of its way to surround him with players that make his life more difficult. and he had the best year of his career. So you have him. I think he's a wonderful, I don't know if wonderful is the right word, but I think he's an effective influence on younger guys who want to work hard and who want to win. And I think that Karl Anthony Towns, this is his third year. He has the potential to be the best player at his position this year, right? I mean, he's only 21 years old, I think. And it's just he's absolutely remarkable. So I think the growth that we see from him on the defensive end with Taj Gibson there, who can communicate on the court, which is something Tom Thibodeau is obviously incapable of doing as much as he wishes he could with, you know, how loud he is from the sidelines. But having Taj Gibson there, and it looks like he's going to start at the four. You have Jimmy Butler there, two guys who really know Thibodeau's system. I would like to see, you know, modest leaps out of Andrew Wiggins on the defensive end as well. I thought he was one of the worst defenders in the league last year. Zach LaVine is obviously gone, and he was one of the worst defenders in the league. So I like this team. I think that they'll make a modest jump in their defensive rating. I don't think that they'll be in the top 10 necessarily, but, you know, league average would be great. And then their offense should be it's kind of, a lot of people are talking about how they don't have enough shooting. And I don't really know if that's going to be an issue when you have so many players who can just force double teams. Jimmy Butler can force double teams and triple teams. Karl Anthony Towns, when he gets it on the block, is unstoppable, and he can shoot threes. So I don't know. I think this team is going to be really good.
And, of course, we always have to talk about the Lakers. We have to talk about Lonzo, of course, or Kyle Kuzma, really, is who we all really want to talk about. I don't think this is a playoff team, obviously, but do you – is this going to be getting back? Are the Lakers on the right track now? Considering, you know, they had all the young talent that didn't seem to be mixing, it wasn't really coming together. Does Magic Johnson, at least, what are your thoughts about Magic Johnson's understanding of the salary cap and understanding of NBA economics? Are they generally on the right track? Are they going to at least be an interesting team to watch?
Oh, they'll be interesting for sure. I mean, I do not watch college basketball, but Lonzo Ball, I watched UCLA games specifically to see what the deal was with him. And he's fantastic. His summer league was exciting. You know, his ability in the preseason on the offensive end, he's shown out pretty well. But I mean, they've added NBA players, whereas they didn't really have any previously. So you add Brooke Lopez, you add Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. These are good NBA players, and to get them on 1 year deals or expiring contracts, that was fantastic. So I think that slots everybody into a more proper position and with more appropriate responsibilities. You know, the growth of someone like Brandon Ingram will be humongous this season. I don't necessarily think that Julius Randle is a very good NBA player, but he should be better than he was last year, one would assume. And then, as you alluded to, Kyle Kuzma, who is, you know, going to win the MVP in 2019 at the latest. So, yeah, it's going to be an exciting team for sure. I don't think they'll be very good, but they also have no incentive to tank. So they should win at least 30 games.
All right, give me your eight playoff teams that you've got in the Western Conference. Let me see. So obviously you have Oklahoma City, Golden State, San Antonio, Houston, Minnesota. Who else?
So this is really, really tough. My 6, 7, 8 in order, and this changes by the day, but I actually just wrote this down for a piece that's going to be published, so I'll be locked into this prediction. But my 6 is the Clippers. I think that Blake Griffin is still very good, and it'll be really interesting to see kind of how productive and the different ways he's able to contribute now that Chris Paul is gone. So I like them. 7 is the Utah Jazz, and Dante Exum's injury is kind of heartbreaking and a huge step back for that team. Just, you would assume that this could be a breakout year for him. So that's a huge bummer. But I think in the NBA, when you are so locked in on the defensive end and you know your identity, you have an advantage over your opponent on a nightly basis, and you throw in Quinn Snyder, who I think is a top 5 coach, and you have a recipe for success. So I think that the Jazz are going to make the playoffs despite losing Gordon Hayward and George Hill. And then 8, I have the Denver Nuggets, and that was, it's tough to leave out teams like the Portland Trailblazers, maybe even the New Orleans Pelicans, just because of their top tier talent.
The Grizz.
And the Grizz, yeah, I'm pretty low on the Grizz, which I love and respect Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, but I don't see like anything else there, which really stinks and is really depressing. But Denver, you know, they add Paul Millsap, who is awesome on both ends. And, you know, obviously the guy there is Jokic, and he's going to be an absolute stud from day one. He's probably one of the five most entertaining players in the entire league. Defense is a concern there, and that's kind of why I might, you know, you could argue for a couple other teams in this spot, but I think they'll be really difficult to defend when you have someone like Jokic, who's just like pinging the ball around from the elbow, throwing it over his head. He's incredible. So that's going to be my, that's how I would round out the top eight, I think.
All right. To the Eastern Conference. Certainly there's been this idea that the Eastern Conference is weaker. You've seen a couple, and particularly when you see some of the player movements that have happened and the number of teams that seem to be following the old 76ers route. So my first question there is, before we get into any of that, we're going to discuss the top of the conference, but I really want to know, are the 76ers making the playoffs?
I don't think so. You know, I love Joel Embiid, obviously. I was watching their preseason game against the Brooklyn Nets, and I don't recall seeing just like one player as dominant and as large and as skilled as he was in that game. I think he attempted like 16 free throws in 11 minutes in the first half or something. I mean, it was like, it was absurd. And, you know, if he can stay healthy, he'll probably one day be the best player alive. So, but I don't think that that day is today. I still think that they're going to keep him on a minutes limit. He's never played over 30 minutes in a game in his entire career. He's obviously only played 31 games in 3 years. And it all basically hinges on him. And I don't think he's going to play enough minutes, play enough games. I love Ben Simmons. I think that he'll probably be the rookie of the year. And I don't know what the deal is with his jump shot, and that's kind of remains to be seen. But they've surrounded him with some quality NBA players. You know, JJ Redick signed there. I think Amir Johnson still has a tiny bit left in the tank. I really love Dario Saric off the bench. I think, you know, over the next few years, he could be just a really nice complimentary piece for these guys. But I just, they're just too young for me. And the leap that is required from where they've been over the past few years is just too gargantuan. You know, as bad as the other teams in the East are, at least they have experience. They have, you know, reliable pieces. I don't know if the Sixers have that right now.
All right. So when I look at the conference, thank you for canceling the holidays, by the way. then I look at the, tell me if I'm wrong. To me, it looks like there are clear four best teams in this conference. No order. Boston, Toronto, Cleveland, Washington. Would you say that's an accurate statement, or am I missing somebody?
The one team I would throw in there is the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay. Okay.
Just because when you have someone like Giannis on your team, you are like, you're terrifying.
Right.
So
he got more jacked in the offseason. You see those pictures of him? He looks like even somehow more muscular. It's kind of scary.
It's very scary. It's very, very scary stuff. So I would throw them in there, and I would probably still put the Cavs kind of in their own tier. And then I would jumble the Celtics, Wiz, Raptors, and Bucks. And I would put the Bucks like a tiny step behind, just because their year to year consistency kind of bothers me a little bit. But yeah, that's for the, I mean, overall, yeah, I would agree with what you said.
How is this Boston thing going to work? Obviously, even when you have players with more talent, even with the Heat when they started, or the Cavs when they started, even when the Warriors first really got going, there was this transition period. It feels like even more of a transition is going to happen with Boston, just because the way that Kyrie plays is so kind of different. And then, of course, obviously, you bring in Hayward. It just looks like an entirely different team. And I trust Stevens. I think Stevens is a good coach, and they've got obviously something good going on there. But it's still feels like there's going to be a learning curve this year.
Oh, there's definitely going to. I mean, they've looked really good in the preseason, but it's the preseason, so, you know, I'm not getting too excited about it or putting too much stock into it. But I think that there's definitely going to be a learning curve here situation, and Kyrie has been, you know, he's been in a system that's kind of just allowed him to isolate whenever he wants and take his man off the dribble and take really difficult mid-range shots. And to his credit, he makes an absurd percentage of them. But obviously, the Celtics don't really play that way. They're more structured offense. They read and react. It's more of a motion concept. So how he fits in is definitely really interesting. I think that the transition for someone like Gordon Hayward might be a little easier just coming from Utah. It's kind of a it's pretty similar offensive system, and I think his life will be easier playing with Al Horford at the five as opposed to Rudy Gobert, just a big who can shoot threes, who can pass really well. So from that perspective, I don't know if there's a lot of adjustment, but I mean, the bigger thing for me is just the youth and the inexperience. Jaylen Brown, this is his second year. It looks like he's going to start on opening night. Jason Tatum is a rookie. He's going to start on
Right.
opening night. So that's a little concerning. And, you know, Brad Stevens has mentioned multiple times that, you know, he really wants more practice time. That's just kind of what he loves. And he's just never really, he's never really adjusted properly from coming to college with the NBA with the lack of the opportunity to practice, implement stuff, get guys on the same page. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how it all comes together. This team really doesn't have an identity, which they've had over the past 3, 4 years since he's been there. So finding that will be difficult. But I mean, at the end of the day, they have a lot more talent than they did last year, and that really matters in the NBA.
When you look at a team like Toronto, it feels like I know there's some Toronto fans that have been a little frustrated that you know they've topped out a little bit. But is Toronto sure they probably it's hard to imagine them being like a ton better and they haven't like quite broken through. But are they of the hey maybe LeBron twists an ankle idea where they just kind of hang out and be good enough and maybe catch a break at that point? Like at this point, what's a better bet than that?
I'm not as high on them. Just, I don't know. Like, I respect them. I respect Kyle Lowry. But, you know, every time they get to the playoffs, they all suck. Like, it's just like individually, like DeMar DeRozan, we know the playbook there. He isn't going to shoot threes, and that hurts the team every single time they get to the postseason. So I think it's intriguing here with the youth that they have. You know, they added CJ Miles, who's a really nice veteran who can play some small ball for them. It'll be interesting to see kind of if they're the rookie. I don't want to butcher his name. I think it's OG Anunoby. It'll be interesting to see if he can contribute right away. I think a lot of people were surprised to see him healthy this early, coming back from his knee injury in college. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, his dose of athleticism and youth, how that kind of, if that can support the top tier guys on the team. But I don't know. It's at the end of the day, like the best players are their best players, and they're only a year older. And until DeMar DeRozan shoots threes, I don't know if there's another dimension that this team can kind of reach or go to.
So, how about the Cavs then? Obviously, it seems weird to think as a Knicks fan, and yes, sorry, you're going to have to talk about the Knicks here in a second. But as a Knicks fan watching Derrick Rose last year, it's hard to imagine him going anywhere on any team that had any sort of plans to want to do anything. I know he's just kind of filling in for Isaiah Thomas until he's healthy. But the Cavs, it's funny, the Celtics have had changes. The Cavs have had a lot of big changes too. Is this a if Kevin Love can jump up and have a big season thing? Or is this really just LeBron and then four people that LeBron trusts? That's who you'll take in the Eastern Conference.
LeBron is, you know, he kind of makes everything okay with me. I mean, he's still incredible. He's still the best player alive. That being said, I mean, obviously the big question here is Isaiah Thomas. So I mean, you lose Kyrie Irving, who is obviously a dynamic scorer and one of the 10 most talented offensive players in the league. So you lose him and you don't really replace him with anything offensively. You're just trying to, you know, hope that Derrick Rose can give you something, that Dwayne Wade can give you something. You hope that Kevin Love can morph into what he was back when he was, you know, one of the 10 best players alive. I'm a little skeptical of their coaching as well. I don't really understand starting Dwayne Wade over J.R. Smith. That one just doesn't make any sense to me. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's LeBron. He's not going to lose a playoff series. It doesn't matter. I think Isaiah will be healthy enough by the spring to start impacting games. And yeah, I mean, it's still this team and everybody else, in my opinion.
Do you think they're the number one seed, or I mean, whether it matters or not, do you think they'll be the number one seed? And if not, who do you think will be?
I think that depends on if LeBron wants to win the MVP or not. If he does, they will be the one seed, and he will play, you know, 80 games and be incredibly dominant on both ends. If he doesn't care, then, you know, they could fall to the third seed. I wouldn't be totally shocked. I would probably put the Wizards and the Celtics in one and two, in some order. But yeah, if I had to bet on it, I would say that I think LeBron really cares right now. I think he's, you know, this could be his last year in Cleveland. And he is probably going, I mean, I think the MVP could mean something as well to him. Winning another one would be pretty special at this stage of his career. And it looks like with kind of all the other candidates minus Kawhi Leonard matched up now with other superstar players who kind of cannibalize each other with the voting, this could be a year where he could get it. So yeah, if he takes that seriously and that's kind of his motivation during the regular season, then yeah, I don't see why they shouldn't be the top seed.
Let's talk about the Wiz real fast. I like the Wizards. I was going to get to MVP in a second. It feels like John Wall be a like quiet closet candidate for the MVP? I find in an East that's pretty down, it's something that the Wizards could kind of really kind of make some hay out of.
Yeah, I like this team just because I'm a big proponent of continuity. I think it's incredibly valuable. So, you know, they basically bring back the starting five they've had for the last few years, one of the best five-man units in the league. John Wall, yeah, I don't know if he's an MVP candidate, but he is one of the most exciting players to watch. And he is, if he brings it on the defensive end, he could really elevate himself among the standing at his position. But I think that the key variables here for this team are just kind of internal growth. How much better is Bradley Beal going to be than he was last year? How much better is Otto Porter going to be? Is Otto Porter going to excel on the defensive end? Is he stronger than he's been in the past? And then, you know, is Jan Mahimi going to be healthy? Is Markieff Morris going to be healthy? Are they going to get anything out of their bench, which is still pretty paper thin? I mean, they had Jody Meeks, who's been injured basically every year for the past 7 or 8 years, and Mike Scott, who, yeah, we should probably just stop talking about him. And so I don't know if they have any depth, but John Wall is obviously for real. He's an amazing player. And, you know, this team is, they have its core kind of locked in for another 3 or 4 years. So I like them. I like the fact that they seem to like each other, the fact that they have good chemistry. But I don't know if they have another level to reach when games really start to matter.
All right. Now you have to talk about the Knicks. I'll okay. Just talk me into something. Give me something good. If obviously trading Carmelo for as little as they got for him clearly was a move that had to be made at some point to at least get the team over to Porzingis. If Nikolita is able to at least show a little bit of offense and have that kind of length on defense, and maybe, you know, you get a little bit, you get a little Cordy Lee, maybe a little McBuckets, maybe a something. Maybe they're not a playoff team, but like, I don't know if I want them to be a playoff team. But does it, like, they've got their draft picks. The Hardaway deal was bad, but not you know, not Joakim Noah bad. So there's that. So give me a couple things to feel happy about, or at least more positive about as a Knicks fan, just so I can, I'm not just flipping around on League Pass that I occasionally stop on my actual team.
Well, I
oh, yeah, well, here we go. It's going to be hard.
I mean, the number one thing is Kristaps.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, I mean, if he can show meaningful strides on both ends, you know, if he's switching out on guards and locking them down or something like that, and, you know, he's making 38% of his threes, he's the centerpiece here. So his growth and his development should be the number one priority for the organization. That being said, it looks like, you know, they don't really have a roster that supports him as well as, you know, that is ideal. They have a lot of big guys who I don't know how good they're going to be. Just like,
There's a lot of
There's a lot of them, and, you know, they're not great. They're all being paid a lot of money, obviously, and they have serious flaws, and they're all injury prone, or a majority of them. So I don't know. And then there's just like the sideshow aspect of the roster. You know, you have Mike Beasley. I don't know if Jarrett Jack if there's been news on whether or not he's going to make the team or what. But
Trey Burke is hanging around too. Trey Burke's around.
Yeah, Trey Burke's around. That's true. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be really excited for the lottery, honestly, if I was a Knicks fan. I think this team could be like special in its future. I like how putrid they are. I think Tim Hardaway Jr., just bringing him up real briefly, I liked kind of what I've seen from him in the preseason, just his inclination to jack up threes at every chance he gets. I think, you know, you could see some excitement there, or at least like some titillating basketball where he's, you know, he could have some high scoring performances. But, you know, there's really no pathway here to a winning product. And they probably will have one of the worst defenses in the league. And just, you got to hope that Kristaps isn't like totally depressed in that environment.
Awesome. Special in their putridity. I will take it. All right. So playoff teams, Boston, Toronto, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Washington. Give me the other three.
Okay. So again, yeah, my 6 through 8 in order. I have the Heat at 6. I just love their depth. I love their playing style. Rodney Magruder getting hurt is a bummer because I was weirdly interested in seeing how he would play this year. But, you know, Justice Winslow, I think a lot of people are extremely low on him, and I'm irrationally high. I think that he can still have a breakout year. And, you know, I don't know if he'll shoot the ball extremely well, but he's just such a versatile, nice player. He's so young. So he intrigues me. You know, they have an extremely good coach, an extremely established culture. They have real talent. So I like them at 6. 7, I have the Charlotte Hornets. And I there's really nothing to say at this point, like in terms of excitement. It's just like, blah, they're the Charlotte Hornets. They're the 7th seed. Nick Batum's injury is a huge bummer. It makes watching them that much less exciting. I like Kemba. I think Dwight Howard might have a tiny bit left in the tank, but he is dangerously close to China. There's really Malik Monk is an intriguing player from what I've seen in the preseason. But yeah, that's basically where I end the conversation with the Hornets. And then at 8, I have, instead of Philly, I have the Detroit Pistons. I don't really have any concrete.
Don't go through the trouble. Don't bother. Don't kill yourself. I think, yeah, seriously, I'm not going to, there are no follow-ups coming on the Pistons. So don't worry.
I appreciate that.
So, all right. So that leads us then to two final questions before we get our finals pick. Who is your main rookie of the year candidate? And by this, I don't tell. Actually, that's actually you said Ben Simmons, but I don't really care who actually is going to win the award because didn't like Sarek won. Was it Brogdon or was it Sarek that won last year?
It was Brogdon.
It was Brogdon. Yeah. So like, woo, like that's not the rookie everyone was talking about last year. So give me the rookie that everyone we're going to be really excited about talking in the next year. The guy that makes the big, massive first impression.
Dennis Smith Jr.
Okay.
I was like, that's another, just going back to the Knicks. I don't want to make you sad.
I wondered if this was coming.
So, I mean, he's just like, what's really excited me watching him in the preseason is, you know, Rick Carlisle loves slowing it down. He loves, I think the Mavericks led the NBA last year in the percentage of their possessions that were in the half court. And he's like totally just taken off the training wheels and just letting Dennis Smith push off of misses. And that is how you have to play when you have someone like that. Someone who is, you know, he's probably already one of the 10 most athletic players in the league. I'm really high on him. And so that's probably my pick. But I mean, if I had to pick rookie of the year, it's Ben Simmons. He's just like on a different level in terms of his overall talent and his ceiling.
All right. And you kind of hinted earlier that LeBron might want to win the MVP this year. Is he your pick?
Yeah. You know, it was Kawhi Leonard, but this injury
makes you nervous.
I don't know how many games he's going to miss. And if, you know, the good part of it is that a lot of people have recency bias when it comes to this stuff, and he should be operating at a high level later in the year when it matters. But I think LeBron, you know, sprained ankle aside, he's just the best player in the world. He does not have a top 10 player on his team. And if the Cavaliers kind of roll through the East, as you know, they still are definitely able to do, I don't see why he shouldn't be the MVP.
And the last question before I let you shuffle off this until I tell you next year how excited I am for the 2018-19 NBA season, is it a Cavs-Warriors final and is it a Warriors title?
So I haven't been super public with my prediction here.
Okay.
But
well, listen, you don't have to tell me if this is secret place land. You don't have to tell me if you want to keep this to yourself and your friends and your family.
I don't want to come off as being like I'm stirring the pot or I'm being an antagonist just for the sake of antagonizing the discussion. But I honestly think that the Houston Rockets are going to win the championship
this
year.
I love it. All right, go on, make the case.
Well, I mean, they already had one of the 10 best offenses in NBA history. They have two top 15 players, a top 5 player with Harden. I think their main flaw last year was, you know, they had a little bit of depth issues on the wing, but also just James Harden breaking down towards the end of the year. I really love the fact that they can always have one of the best pick and roll playmakers in NBA history on the floor in a Mike D'Antoni offense with Paul and Harden. That is amazing. And, you know, I'm really, really high on the supplementary pieces they added. I think PJ Tucker is just, he's absolutely perfect. They could not have gotten a better player for that role. Someone who, you know, I talked to him a little while ago about his off season, and, you know, he's known as one of the more high volume corner three shooters in the league. And I think only Klay Thompson and Trevor Ariza have launched more than him last season, but he basically spent the entire summer working on his above the break threes, which is something he's never really attempted before. And he's shown in the preseason an ability to make those a little bit. So I just love the lineups that he kind of unlocks for that team. And, you know, matching up, this team is going to shoot a ton of threes. I think just mathematically, they're going to be really difficult to stop. They're going to score a ton of points. And in a particular, in the matchup against the Warriors, I mean, they have pieces that really line up nicely and they have the talent to get it done. So it's, you know, I wouldn't say that they're favorites but I would not be totally shocked if they came out on top in a 7-game series.
Oh, man, that would be awesome. And I say that as someone that essentially helped cover the Knicks for New York Magazine when D'Antoni was there. The man deserves it, for crying out loud. The man deserves a title as much as any coach I can imagine. This is going to be, see, you did not disprove me. This is going to be great. This season is going to be a blast, even though, yikes, like every year you go into a dark place as a Knicks fan. You actually took me down a little darker place than I was ready for this year. So thank you. All right. Well, so we all find your work on Vice Sports. You are the man we can force at Michael V. Pina, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So find it at Vice Sports. And of course, the Big Three podcast. So I always got to listen to the Big Three podcast. Michael, thank you for your time. Enjoy the season. And I'll look forward to maybe we'll preview the playoffs, which will be here in like we'll blink and they'll be here. It's crazy. We're all getting older and falling apart in atrophy.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me, Will.
Of course. All right. So that is the show. We'll be back later this week. Dave Zirin is actually going to be on the podcast on Wednesday. And my old friend, Dave, we have much to discuss. Lots have happened in the world, in Dave's world over the last decade. I want to talk to him about a lot of that. We'll be back later on this week. Music is by the Haraway Brothers. Rate us on iTunes, all that stuff. Otherwise, we'll be back later this week. Bye. Hey.